Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me in lieu of my co-hosts, Sarah Chalea and Morten Jensen, is Jeff Fair, a B-Ball Breakdown draft expert. Jeff, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing well, man. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so full disclosure before we get underway, Jeff, Morten, and I actually spoke on Saturday. We tried to record this podcast for the first time and spoke about 75 minutes about all these draft prospects. And during the editing process, the podcast goblins got to us, so we actually lost that footage. But today, Jeff and I are here to recreate that magic. So you can find Jeff on Twitter at JFEY5. You can find his work at B-Ball Breakdown and Nylon Calculus. And he is here today to talk all things draft, because it is coming up. We're recording this on Wednesday, so it is a week from tomorrow.
1 week.
Yeah, so let's start right at the top, because there's been some...
Easy.
Some stories about Ben Simmons refusing to work out for Philadelphia. Before we dive in there, really... Jeff, who do you have at the top of your big board?
Well, unlike most people, I'm being the contrarian and going with Brandon Ingram. And,
interesting.
It's not necessarily because of how I view Ben Simmons as a player overall. It's just from my perspective, and I think I mentioned this to you before, is like, you know, my view is skewed very much toward what I saw on the court last year from a college standpoint. Say what you will about college basketball and its shortcomings, but Ben Simmons came in with these heightened expectations, and you were left mystified every time you watched him last year. You know the skill is there, you know he has the ability, but every time you watched him, he left you wanting a little bit. Whereas Brandon Ingram came out and just played phenomenally compared to expectations. Now, trying to separate that from what you see in Simmons' skill level and the versatility he has is tough to do. Because you do want to take that production into account in some respects. But as we'll get to, I'm sure, later, I mean, I have them bunched very closely together. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of personal preference because I like the guys that can, I like guys that can shoot it from the outside. And Brandon Ingram could certainly do that.
Yeah.
I think the comparisons, if you've seen any comparisons of him to Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. is a little much.
Yeah.
I don't think he's not near to that level. But... I think the decision between Ingram and Simmons really comes down to a fit thing and whatever team is drafting at the top of the board and what they want to do with that particular player and what their need is, especially when two guys are close together. I mean, we'll talk about value of players independent of need. Mm-hmm. But when you have two guys so close together skill-wise, is similar as they are, and they're both at least 6'9", both perimeter based for the most part, but their skill levels are varied. So it really would come down to how the team drafting them is going to use it. But I have Ingram number one, very close to Simmons, and it really is just because it Simmons opened up more question marks last year than anything else.
Gotcha. If you were the Sixers, then would you take Ingram, or do you think you mentioned kind of fit being in there. So
yeah, I mean, I could see them going either way and it making sense either way. It really depends on what the next step is after that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if their idea is that they're without a point guard right now,
right.
They're talking about trading Okafor and Noel. They have mm-hmm. a new GM. I mean, what is the plan there? We don't know what the plan is yet because it's a new regime. We don't know if they're going to carry out any of the process or
right.
not. But I mean, they're dangling both their post guys that are recent high draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
They have very little in the way of contracts on the books, and you don't know what the next step of the plan is. If they're looking for a guy to run the offense out of the high post, have that positional versatility, then I would go with Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a guy to play on the perimeter next to a traditional point guard, shoot the ball from the outside, create scoring that way, then I think you go for Ingram. With Simmons, and you don't get rid of those two post guys, because it's gonna really clog the lane, because Simmons just can't shoot from the outside really well right now.
Right.
Whether or not that skill will develop is unknown, but if you're going into next season with Simmons, Okafor, and Noel all on the same team, you might be in some trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the question. As you said, the plan right now is very up in the air. It sounds like they are leaning toward trading either Noel or Okafor, presumably by draft night. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we've heard Nerlens for Jeff Teague. We've heard Okafor linked to the Celtics, who have the number 3 pick, which we will get to shortly. So it sounds like one of those two guys is on their way out. I mean, longtime listeners of the podcast will know I've been pretty firmly Team Simmons just because of that, what you mentioned. You know, they don't have a point guard. So it's not like you're displacing, not even like a Stephen Curry or Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul, but like, you don't even have like a Reggie Jackson or a Jeff Teague or a George Hill, like a mid-level point guard. There is nothing. Mm-hmm. Like Ish Smith is the best point guard on the roster, and he's a free agent. So you are free to put the ball in Simmons' hands as much as you want, and it kind of allows you to build a very unconventional backcourt where you don't need guys who need the ball in their hands all the time, which I like. But then again, I mean, Ingram... I mean, it seems like there's no wrong answer here, right? Like, whichever guy they pick is going to has an all-star ceiling.
Sure. This seems like a year where there really is no wrong answer either way it goes. I mean, imagine them having the number one pick in the Anthony Bennett draft in 2013. But yeah, if they had the number one pick in that draft, then we have issues.
Right.
But this is a draft where you have two guys firmly at the top that would no doubt both be number one in that particular draft.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. I mean, you could really build some interesting stuff out of Simmons. If you work the offense at the high post, you put a couple guards in the backcourt that are 3 and D, they can handle the ball a little bit. You're creating a pretty versatile, diverse lineup. Ingram, I mean, can he create enough off the dribble in order to sustain without a true point guard? It's really, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes the Sixers know that we don't know that we can't account for. So, I mean, if they're going to trade Noel for Jeff Teague, then we're, I mean, you got to, I don't even know how you describe Jeff Teague, but I think they're in a good position because they're able to work the rest of their roster based around what they do at number one.
Yeah.
Not the other, they're not letting the rest of their roster dictate the pick at number one. They're letting the pick at number one dictate what they do the rest of this offseason.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And you mentioned earlier the kind of the fit versus BPA debate. So where do you fall in that spectrum?
I'm all for fit. I'm all for going for fit, but as long as you're not sacrificing value. I think if you've got two guys rated the same and you have a need at a particular position, then you go for the guy that fits best with your team. But I mean, you don't want to draft a guy higher than he should strictly based on need. I mean, you're not going to draft a guy. I mean, for instance, if you have a need at shooting guard or you're not at shooting guard in this draft, you're not going to draft Jamal Murray or Buddy Hield ahead of Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons. As much as some guys like those two players, and I like them both a lot, but you're just not going to do that because Ingram and Simmons have the chance to be transcendent NBA players. Mm-hmm. I, for one, and I forgot if I mentioned this to you, but I love Chris Dunn. I love Chris Dunn. I think he'd be an excellent fit for the Sixers in their backcourt and solve their point guard problems right away. He's one of my favorite point guards in the last few drafts. But again, do they like him enough to risk, I don't want to say the public backlash from taking him over Simmons and Ingram, because that, you know, that doesn't come into, they say that doesn't come into conversations, but you know, in some respects it does.
Right.
But I mean, it's whether or not they think Dunn can be better than Ingram and Simmons. We just don't know that. But I love the fit for Dunn and Philly, but he's not going to go at number one before Ingram and Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mentioned this earlier. I don't know what caused this like flood of stories the past 2 days, but Ben Simmons is so far refusing to work out for Philadelphia, and now people are making a huge deal of it. Is it as big of a deal as people are saying?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think, I mean, there's monetarily, there's not really anything he's going to gain by going to another team. There's not going to, I mean, right now, and you know, you going to LA over Philly is just more of a personal preference than anything else. That then would kind of raise some red flags about, you know, is Ben Simmons really that into just playing the game, or is he, you know, more into the ancillary things that go along with it. But I don't think it's a big deal at all, not working out for the team. But, you know, we don't know exactly what their rationale for it is right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it doesn't concern me at all, because if Philly really wants him, they're going to take him. And yeah, there's not really anything he's going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't get why this has become a story, because, A, it's not like he's working out for the Lakers. Like, he's not working out for anyone. So it's not like he's trying to force his way to L.A. necessarily. It's just like he thinks he's going to be the number one pick. He has nothing to gain from working out. Like, the only thing that can hurt, it's just going to hurt him if he has a, like, maybe he has a bad shooting day and Brandon Ingram came into Philly and knocked down, like, 90 of 100 threes. And then all of a sudden, there's more doubt.
It's so crazy that an NBA, like, rumor or NBA non-story like this is being blown up into something else. It's crazy. That never happens.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's just, I mean, like, ESPN ran with it today. I saw a story on The Big Lead earlier that made me almost punch my computer. So I wanted to put that to rest right now.
I don't think there's anything to be concerned about. And I think that, I mean, Philly knows what they want to do, and if they're really confident Simmons is the guy, he's going to be the guy regardless of whether or not, I mean, they have enough intel on him to know whether he's their guy or not.
Yeah, for sure. So, seems like in some order, the Sixers presumably are leaning Simmons, the Lakers will take Ingram at 2. So, number 3, the Celtics, really the fulcrum of the whole draft, because that's the one spot where things can really swing. So,
yeah,
talk to me about your next 3. How do you have the guards ranked in that range? Chris Dunn, Jamal Murray, sure, and Buddy Hield.
Sure. I have a Dunn, Murray, Hield.
Okay.
And I like all of them. I'm a fan of all three of their games. All three of them different, clearly. And just to touch on the fact that, you know, Boston being the fulcrum of the draft, there's obviously a chance that a guy like Dragon Bender is going to go here. Yep. I didn't feel I haven't done enough work on the international guys to really warrant me talking about them, because I think there's guys out there that do a ton of great work on the international guys that I just haven't seen enough tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel confident ranking those guys, because I'm a college junkie and that's where I focus most of my attention. But Chris Dunn, you know, you have a guy that's explosive in the open court, can run an offense. Played for 4 years at Providence with, you know, not a big program, not playing with guys that were top recruits. Got him to the second. What do they call it? I think they're calling it like the second or third. I think they're back to calling it the second round now. The
tournament. Yeah, the rather 32 is so, now the second round again.
It's now the second round again. Thank God. but you know, he does a lot of good things. There's some questions about his pick and roll ability in the half court. But again, does that come back to what the type of athlete he was, or the type of player he was playing with at Providence?
Right.
He's playing next to a guy that broke out last year in Ben Bensel, who I like. But again, the talent level was not that of a Duke or North Carolina that he was playing with.
Yeah.
Defensively on the ball, he's tenacious, great hands, top 5 in the NCAA in steals last year. Really does a good job in that. And so I'm a huge fan of Chris Dunn. Also, he's long. I believe he's got like a 6'10", 6'11 wingspan for a guy that's 6'3", 6'4". So that goes a long way, too. Jamal Murray, guy that can play both guard spots, or they project to play both guard spots. Didn't play a lot of point guard at Kentucky because of Tyler Ulis. Can shoot the ball. Really played well in his freshman year, his only year at Kentucky. Playing, again, next to guys, they really relied on Ulis and Murray heavily, because they weren't getting as much as they expected out of guys like Scal, Labissiere, and other guys in the front court there offensively. Basically, Scal and Marcus Lee, who now transferred, and Alex Poitras, they weren't really running any offense through them. It was mostly generated through the backcourt. But Murray, you know, only 1 year of college, young, able to – he's not as athletic as people want him to be, but mm-hmm. I think he's athletic enough for me. So that's what some people have questioned, but he does the job for me. Buddy Hield, I'm a Buddy Hield fan. I caught Buddy Hield fever last year. wrote an article about him for Nylon Calculus based on his development as a player through 4 years, mm-hmm. and really how he's refined his approach and become more efficient. He's really improved not only his 3-point rate, but his free throw rate and getting into the basket and drawing fouls, which I think is important as well. You know, generating those extra points, not just from 3-point attempts, but also from getting to the basket, drawing fouls, creating off the dribble. Not as quick But he's not as, again, not as athletic and not as quick as you'd like out of a shooting guard, but his release is flawless. Has some work to do defensively. He's tried to improve this area, but you see him in Oklahoma's defense get lost every now and then. A lot of people question his ability to create as well. Not as big a concern for me, only because he was playing with two point guards in Jordan Woodard and Isaiah Cousins. So there's he's their main guy, and he's playing next to two point guards that also had to create as well. Mm-hmm. So he's doing a lot more stuff off the ball. But I like both Murray and Heald's ability to move without the ball as well. Murray can have a little work on it, but I like all three of them. And like I said, the order is done. Murray and Heald, and I could see any of them. Any of them fitting up in the top five.
Yeah. So as longtime listeners will know, I have been on a crusade to trade Jahlil Okafor for the number three pick. That's my kind of dream scenario. So if that unfolds, who do you think the Sixers take there, and does it depend on who they take first? Like, are there better fits among those three guards?
Great with question.
Ingram and Simmons?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you take Ingram, you're going with Chris Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you take Simmons, you're going with the shooting.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I mean, if you're looking for guys to match up together for the next 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and you want them to play together, those playing together, I think Ingram and Dunn would absolutely match up. And then Simmons or Murray and Heald. I mean, there's some questions. Chris Dunn's got there are question marks about his shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't fare as poorly, I think, as people make it out to be. I believe he shot 37%, maybe 37% last year from three. But so not as bad as you would as people make it out. Yeah, 37%. So not as bad as you make it out to be, but not his strong suit still. But I think, if they could take Ingram at one, definitely going with Dunn, and then if they take Simmons at one, definitely going with either Heal or Murray.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's where I've kind of fallen as well. It seems like Simmons Murray are the clear pairing there, or it's Ingram Dunn. So glad to hear we're on the same page there. Let's go to some of the biggest question marks in the top 10, because it seems like those five plus Dragan Bender are pretty solid. Top eight range. It seems like Jaylen Brown and Marquise Chris are the two who could really, they have the widest range of any top 10 pick.
Yep.
They could go, either one could go three or they could go 10. So which of those guys do you prefer? What are their strengths and weaknesses? And where do you think they would go? Like, where should they go?
I like Jaylen. I have Jaylen Brown, my number seven college prospect.
Okay.
I like him a lot. Obviously, like any college freshman's got some work to do.
Yeah.
He is athletic, can absolutely jump out of the gym. Physical, hustles, has some work to do in the way of defense. But again, what college freshman doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
He can play two guard, can play the small forward. He needs to get better as far as shooting a little bit. But I think athletically, he can come in right away and have some court kind of impact. Marquise Chris is like the hot name right now, and I know he had some stellar performances last year. I know in the NIT he blew up, had a good season overall last year playing with playing with some decent talent at Washington. But I don't know how you justify taking him that high when you see a guy that's compared favorably to Tyrus Thomas. I mean, that's just kind of that right there as a Bulls fan, I'm kind of raising my eyebrows, but you see him play. You definitely see what entices people. He has a little bit of he's starting to develop ability to step outside and hit a shot. He just absolutely can attack the rim, jump out of the gym. And it's apparently killing workouts. So, if there's even talk last week of the Celtics taking him at three, to me isn't as crazy as you would believe because of how many picks the Celtics do have and the ability for them to move up and down the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't call it that crazy, especially given they're not going to take Celtics. I don't know if they're going to take, even though they had Murray and Heald in for workouts and what. That was the big numbers this week, was how many uncontested in the gym three-pointers both Murray and Heald hit.
Right.
I think Heald hit 85 and Murray hit 79 or 70. Yeah. So, but when you're talking about Boston, you've got a backcourt already with Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, and Isaiah Thomas. So it's like, where do one of those guys fit in? You've got Crowder on the wing. You've got RJ Hunter, who they drafted last year in the first round. He didn't play much. Terry Rozier, who is a first-round pick, who, again, we don't know how you're going to get out of him, but still, you're investing a lot of assets in the backcourt. Do you want to do that again? So that would seem to rule one of the guards out. Well, then you're going to the next step, and really, you look at a guy like Marquise Chris. They really don't have anyone in that front court that's athletically gifted like that. You've got Amir Johnson, who's, you know, he's going to be your enforcer more or less down low, doesn't demand the ball, does the dirty stuff. Someone like Marquise Chris would definitely be unique to what Boston has on their roster right now. Is he a value at three? Not for me, but it's not that crazy to think about him going there when you look at the whole big picture.
Yeah, that's a really good point that, you know, the wealth of draft picks that they have, both this year, they have eight, which, you know, they're not going to use all eight, but they have a lot of draft capital that they can use either to get picks next year, move up in the draft. You know, maybe they package 16 and 23 and move up to a like late lottery pick. So it's risky, but it's not like it's going to cripple them permanently.
And I think with a guy like Danny Ainge, who's secure in his position, he's able to take risks like that, especially when they build up all the draft picks they do have. And, you know, he's had a good track record. He's good enough track record where taking a guy like that there isn't that big of a gamble for him.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So you shared with us your top 50 before we started here. And the one that caught my eye was Sabonis, who you have sixth overall. Tell me about your guy.
My guy, not the most athletic, average athlete, probably is not going to wow you with his workouts. Wingspan about the same as his height, so that's concerning. But he is 6'11". He does have a 6'11" wingspan. It's not like we're talking about a guy who, you know, has like 6'3" arms and 6'11".
Right.
But maybe I think what endears him to me is the fact that he does play a little below the rim, but you watch him play and you see that he knows the game so well and he understands exactly what's going on the floor at all times. And he goes 100% every time, brings energy, brings the passion to the game. And again, that only goes so far, though. You look at the actual basketball sense of it, but he runs the floor well. He can step outside and hit a jumper. He can, you know, he's not relegated to playing in the paint. He's got great footwork for a post. Give him the ball down low and let him work. He's not afraid to be physical, which is so important. So taking into account all those things, every time I watched him, it seemed like I liked him even more every time. I've seen Marc Gasol comparisons, which I love, which I think is pretty appropriate. The way he passes the ball, he's got he's got great court vision and good court sense. Obviously, I totally understand where other people are not ranking him that high. I mean, I've seen him as low as like 22, 23, which totally understandable. And again, that's part of the great thing about this process is that a lot of it is subjective. A lot is personal preference. There's so many variables that go into it that I can totally appreciate someone having him rank low. Mm-hmm. In my mind, if I'm running a team, I would love to have Sabonis on my squad. Again, depending on what compliments him. You're going to need the right front court compliment to him, though. You're going to need someone that's going to be athletic next to him. So that's maybe a hindrance to taking him. You need someone that's athletic in the front court next to him. But I like Sabonis, and Sabonis, I guess, like you said, is my number six guy after the top five.
Yeah.
Not taking into account Bender.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's worth stressing that before we go too much further ranks.
where is Bender? Why is he not? No, that's not what we're doing. So.
Yeah, all international prospects. No Bender, no Furkan Korkmaz, no Luwawu. All those guys are not included here, so keep that in mind. But yeah, I mean, I'm a Georgetown fan, so by the time the NCAA tournament rolls around, I usually have no loyalty at all because we don't. We're usually out by the second round. So I remember Sabonis. I think it was the round of 32 where they played Utah, and he took it to Jakob Poeltl. Who is also a top 10 pick? Like,
right?
Took him to school,
and it wasn't one of those times where you're like, "Wow, Jakob Poeltl is not as good as I thought he was." It was one of those times where you're like, "Sabonis is legit."
Yeah,
because every time I watch Jakob Poeltl, I was impressed. You're gonna see holes in every one of their games if you watch them enough. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was just so impressive to watch him work. I mean, that just fundamentally. I mean, you see a lot of his dad. You really do. You see a lot of if you're old enough to remember Arvidas for Portland. I mean, oh my God! I mean, by the time he came to the NBA, his athleticism was just nothing. Yeah. But he was the center on an almost Western Conference championship team. They didn't blow a 20-point lead to the Lakers, but. They get by on guile and skill and awareness, which I think is a lost art, more or less. I mean, it's people tend to focus in this process in the months leading up to the NBA draft, they tend to focus less on that intangible type thing and more on their physical ability and, you know, tending to rise to the top. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to pay attention to those other things that may, tilt the scales in the favor of someone like Sabonis. So I really enjoy watching him play, and I'm really going to enjoy, you know, seeing where he ends up. I mean, a perfect fit for him would be New Orleans.
Ooh.
Would love to see him next to Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And those two working together. That would be, you know, NBA viewing every night for me. I would watch New Orleans just to see how those two play together.
Yeah.
Because I really think that Sabonis would complement everything that Davis does well, and the other way around.
You mean you're not sold on Omer Asik as their long-term starting complement to Anthony Davis? I'm shocked.
I loved Omer Asik as the 10th man backup center on the Tom Thibodeau Bulls teams.
Yeah.
I do not love him as my starting center making $12 million a year. And putting a burden on my franchise player. No, that's not the Omer Asik I like.
Yeah, that was a good choice by New Orleans. All right, so you're a Bulls guy. Morton's a Bulls guy. Let's look at some guys in the mid-first round who you like a lot. Talk to me about guys you want to see on the Bulls at 14.
Specifically for the Bulls.
Okay. It could be... Anyone mid-first round? Yeah, some of your value picks in the mid-first round.
Guys in the mid-first round that I really, really like and probably like more than other people. I mean, Demetrius Jackson. Love Demetrius Jackson. I love the fact that he, you know, is the third guy behind Pat Connaughton and Jerry and Grant last year on Notre Dame. Went to the Elite Eight. Went toe-to-toe with Kentucky. You know, it was kind of – he didn't need to get the ball that much when you have Connaughton and Jerry and Grant put up the numbers they did. So then this year he transitioned to a whole new role, the lead dog on a team, and they're back in the Elite Eight again. That says something to me. I mean, he's definitely got some deficiencies. He's only 5'11", 6 foot. He is, you know, distributed. He's a score first point guard. So he's going to have to show that he can run an offense effectively. I think he did enough for me. When I watched Demetrius Jackson last year, he did show that enough for me. Whether or not he did that for other people is unknown. Defensively, you know, he's going to give up some physical size to people. He's going to have trouble with bigger guards. That's just the fact of the matter. But his quickness, his speed in the open floor is phenomenal, and that does it for me there. Wade Baldwin from Vanderbilt, you know, a guy that's can play the point guard, can play the two guard, physically can defend both those positions. Is a good distributor, can run an offense, can shoot from the outside. You know, your question marks arise when, okay, why was Vanderbilt with a team with Wade Baldwin and Damian Jones, another first round prospect, why were they, you know, losing in the play-in game last year? Typically teams with that much NBA talent are not losing that early. And there's a wide range. I've seen a wide range of rankings on Baldwin, you know, going as high as I think, our guy, Josh Riddell at B-Ball Breakdown had him. Really early. I think he had him 6 on his board.
Damn.
And I've seen him as low as like 35.
Yeah.
So Baldwin is a very polarizing prospect. It's whether or not he can, whether or not he has the handle, because he does play well off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He does have good passing ability, but it's whether he has the handle to play, play an NBA offense, whether it be operating the pick and roll, the timing and distribution, so little things like that. But I like Wade Baldwin a lot. Another guy that I like in the mid rounds that I think probably more than most people, and now that there's news about him having some injury concerns, is Malik Beasley.
Oh, okay.
Like Malik Beasley, his ability to shoot the ball, you know, leaving after 1 year, put up some really good numbers at Florida State. You know, he played for played under Leonard Hamilton. You know, he's going to be able to defend a little bit. But I really like Malik Beasley and his skill. I mean, out of this world athletic in the open floor, played with some decent prospects at Florida State. Was kind of surprised. I thought he was going to come back for another year just to see what that Florida State team could do next year. But when someone calls and says, hey, Malik, you're going to be a first-round prospect,
yeah,
probably wise to leave.
Right.
I mean, shot it pretty well for a freshman coming in. Pretty efficient numbers last year. You know, got to the free throw line a good deal. Could rebound it pretty well for a guard too. And he's got the size to play both wing positions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's more important more now than ever, is that positional flexibility. You got a guy like Wade Baldwin who can play both guard positions. You got a guy like Beasley who can play the wing. So that's important now. Other guys in the mid round that I like, maybe more than most people. I really like Bryce Johnson. I know some people are down on him with these lanky Carolina guys like John Henson. He's not John Henson. John Henson did not have the offense funnel through him. Bryce Johnson rose to the occasion for North Carolina this year. Kennedy Meeks wasn't pulling his weight in the post this year for Carolina. Still made it to the championship game. But Bryce Johnson really impressed me in his development through his 4 years at Carolina. I think he can come in and very. I every time I watched him, I thought a little bit like Bobby Portis.
Oh,
in the way he plays, which again, you know, as a Bulls fan, I don't know. We don't want to be a little redundant in right. what we pick there. So I like him a lot. And we touched a little bit on Poeltl already, but Poeltl's going to probably go top 10. Tyler Ulis, I'm a huge Tyler Ulis guy. Okay. Again, injury news on him.
Yeah.
Too concerned about him, but you're always going to have with him the size concern, and we. With being only 5'9", and I think he's like 110 pounds. I mean, God, who knows? I think he measured 150 at the combine.
Yeah.
But he ran an offense. He was able to manage a team full of McDonald's All-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, who do they look to in crunch time? The 5'9", 150-pound guy that they needed to carry the load. Him and Jamal Murray, which I think they played well together, but that's a guy that I like. And then Denzel Valentine, who's everyone's favorite, you know, he's another guy that, like Wade Baldwin, has varying opinions on him. Denzel Valentine is not going to take you off the dribble. He's just not. He will on occasion if he's being guarded by Kevin Love. But I mean, he's just not going to take you off the dribble consistently. He can knock it down. He's a versatile weapon. You can run the offense through him. He can guard the wing. He gets by not on speed and agility, but on good footwork, good fundamentals. You know he's coached well with Tom Izzo. He was the leader of that team. I feel like he's a guy that would go into a winning team and have a place right away.
Yeah.
Is he going to be a transcendent star on a team that's trying to get back into the playoffs? Probably not. But is he a guy that can come in and play important minutes right away if you give him the proper role? Yes, absolutely. So when I'm looking at the Bulls in the mid round, those are the guys I like in the mid round, probably more than most. I have Valentine 10. On my chart. Oh, actually, I dropped him to 13 because of the injury concerns recently. Mm-hmm. I moved Jackson up to 10. I have Jackson 10, Baldwin 11, Bryce Johnson 16, Beasley 17. So those are five of my mid-round favorites. Probably similar to everyone else's mid-round favorites, but you know, it's going to be that way. This draft is, you've got five guys at the top that are six guys if you include Bender again, that I think are pretty well settled there.
Yeah,
and then you get after those six, and it's pretty muddled. I mean, you could take it's a who's who. I mean, you've heard this draft is, you know, weak, but
right.
I think it's really, there's just more questions about these guys, and not necessarily the talent isn't there, or not that they can't be good. It's just like any draft, there's so many questions, and maybe more so because you've got a lot of guys that are either 4 year seniors or freshmen coming out that maybe had a little more to do, like a guy like Scal Labissiere who came out after, I mean, just a. People were talking preseason All-American for him.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he averages about 10 minutes a game. I mean, that just is, and it still comes out. I think there's just a lot of questions around those guys. And I think that's the reason you're hearing the talk about the draft being weak.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on Jackson, Baldwin, Valentine as all. I love all three of those guys. I didn't realize about Jackson's like backstory and that he was from a foster family and like
yeah.
fought his way up through a lot of adversity, which, you know, it's hard to conflate that kind of like off-court stuff with on-court stuff. Like, who cares if he
Right.
can't dribble a basketball? But like,
Yeah.
that does say something a little bit to me about, you know, he's perseverance is a like a off-court tangible that you can't measure. So
Absolutely.
like him surviving that type of ordeal and like making it his way to a major college program, and he got suspended temporarily his freshman year, it sounded like, and then you know, turned into an every game starter by a junior. So I didn't realize that until last night, honestly, but after doing a little more reading on him, I like him a lot. And then
It's
Baldwin's my he's my guy who, if the Sixers took Simmons and somehow traded their way back up into the mid first round, he's that like dream point guard. 'Cause I think you mentioned it, you know, there's no, you can't, you're not sure if he, what, if he's like fit to be a point guard in the CP3 role, but you don't need him to be next to Ben Simmons. You've got a 6'4 guy with a 6'11 wingspan, like, that you just need lanky defenders. And if he can learn to shoot a corner three, then he's gold.
It's pretty funny how the top four point guards in this draft, when you talk about Dunn, Baldwin, Jackson, and Ulis, are stylistically very different.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to compare Jackson and Ulis based on their size, but it's really not an apt comparison because, I mean, Jackson's going to be more explosive in the open court. Ulis is going to, be more the game manager. But it really is a menu of options at the point guard position that. I don't think you can go wrong depending on what, like you said, it's going to depend a little bit on fit if the Sixers get one of those guys. But I think you can't go wrong in any of those.
Okay, well, before we go into the late first round guys and go back to Sixers talk for a second, tell me about Scal for a minute. And where do you have him ranked? How worried are you about how he fared compared to those, you know, you mentioned people were calling him a preseason All-American and then he just totally
Right.
flopped. Showed some flashes toward the end of the year, but what do you think of him?
You see when you see him on the court, you see the ability is there. I just think it's going to Kentucky is a tough situation to go to because you are being compared to the other guys that you come in with. You are being compared on a level that's not the same as a team. Say you go to a lesser team. And you're not playing with all that, you get a little more of the attention. Whereas Kentucky, you go there, you're just another guy. And maybe Scale's a guy that needed more individual attention to his game in order to get him to step up a little more. I mean, you see the quickness, you see the agility, you see the athleticism on the court when he's out there. And it's just a matter of finding the right coach that can connect with him and get him to put it together. You're not thought of that highly coming out of high school. And just having the ability to go away. It's in there somewhere, and it's just going to take the right team to harness that from him or take the right team to really have the confidence to take him that high because he's one of those guys, like we mentioned Marquese Chriss, who showed a lot more on the court last year than Scale did. But it's these guys that have the raw ability that can dominate athletically against lesser competition in college, but really they need that additional coaching, additional attention, additional time. And this is a little bit of where I think it's becoming increasingly important for the NBA to have a concrete minor league model for these guys to develop properly and for them to really get a handle on the age thing. I'm a proponent of letting the guys go right from high school. I don't know how many people feel about it, but I feel like if you have all these other sports that they can go right from high school, whether it's hockey, whether it's baseball, they can go right from high school. Why not let them do it in the NBA? And if the NBA had a better, and they're starting to right now with the D League, starting with every team having an affiliation, if you're able to draft a guy like Scale, put him down there for two years with no pressure on him on him to perform, I think you're going to see more guys like this develop into better basketball players. I just think the trouble is going to Kentucky, going in that fishbowl, having the high expectations, and having the pressure of having to perform at the arguably the best college basketball program in the nation, just. It hurt him more than helped him. And I think a lot of guys go to Kentucky with the understanding of, I'm a McDonald's All-American. John Calipari is going to get me drafted. Well, I think we've seen based on the schools and the pre-NBA careers of some of these guys, Stephen Curry went to Davidson and now he's arguably one of the best players in NBA and now being talked about as one of the best players in NBA history. He went to Davidson. Paul George went to Fresno State.
Yep.
These, you're going to get recognized. They're going to find you.
Yeah.
And you don't need to go to a program like Kentucky. Go to the best fit for you. So scale is probably, I think, top as far as like an existential basketball conversation about their place in the world and the player development. Scale is definitely like a great litmus test for that whole argument.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have him 19th on your
19th
big board
right now. 19th. And
it seems like is that kind of like you think he could develop into a top 10 talent, but you also think he could just be a total bust. So you're kind of splitting the difference there.
Yeah. Balancing risk with talent. I mean, yeah. It's just, again, it goes back to the individuality of people putting together big boards and what they see and how they, with their personal preference.
Right.
If I'm sitting there and I say, okay, this is how much I weigh risk versus how much I weigh reward. That's what I see with Scal. And I mean, if I'm a team in the lottery and I have, the confidence, I can take a guy like him in
mm-hmm.
and make him into a player, then I would absolutely take the shot on that. I mean, like a team like Toronto.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a playoff team.
Right.
Why take a chance on Scal? You have Valanciunas there, but Scal is not the same player as Valanciunas. And mm-hmm. you could bring him along slowly and develop him, and there's not any pressure for him to perform because he's going to a playoff team. So I think Toronto is even a good fit for Scal.
Yeah, I've seen him mocked mostly to Toronto and Orlando, which both seem mm-hmm. like pretty good fits for him. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Before we drop down into the late first round guys, do you want to do a quick lottery mock draft for us?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do something that's going to be completely wrong in like a week.
Yeah.
But it's still fun to do. It's, you know, hashing this stuff out is kind of like, it's, you know, trying to put the pieces together is fun.
Yeah. Well, until the Sixers blow it all up and trade Okafor for the number 3 pick, at least
just watch the Sixers, watch everything come together on draft night.
Knock on wood,
or you're going to have Brian Colangelo calling teams for scouting reports.
Yeah.
Like you did when he was in Toronto.
Right. Exactly. There are two very polarizing directions they could go, and it's either going to go really well or really poorly. So, all right, Mr. Colangelo, you are on the clock at number one. It sounds like you are taking Brandon Ingram.
I really think we should go your way. I mean, if you want Simmons at number one, let's go Simmons number one.
We'll do Simmons number one. Okay, so then
let's go Simmons number one, and then that means Ingram goes two.
Okay,
which I think is if they're going to keep that core together that they're building.
Yeah.
You have a core of D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, and Julius Randle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good combination of guys. As long as D'Angelo Russell isn't like tweeting photos of or what,
right?
Pissing his teammates off.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good core to build around there, and I think you have a good balance between those three players.
Yeah, I agree. It seems like he's a much better fit. He's a better fit than Simmons there, because Simmons and Randle. That seems kind of questionable. Like, you want Simmons at the four and you want Randle at the four. So
Right.
So, all right, now the Celtics. This is the big swing factor here.
Well, I think if we're gonna be realistic about it, I think this is the spot that Bender goes.
Oh,
because
okay.
I think it is the spot. I think this is the spot that Bender goes. If we're gonna, you know, go the other way and stick to the college, let's do some options here. I think one of the shooters, either whether it's Heald or Murray, because you look at Marcus Smart, Isaiah Thomas, and Avery Bradley. I mean, it's Avery Bradley can shoot it. Marcus Smart struggles, and Isaiah Thomas can shoot it. But Isaiah Thomas is going to be more of the point guard, not really the off the ball scorer.
Yep.
But if I'm being realistic, I think this is the spot for Bender.
Yeah.
I think Bender's going to go here, and again, we talk about that risk with the picks. Okay, take a risk on a high end international prospect here. That is a little different than the guys you have on the roster, and that would seem to be Bender who fits there.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It seems like he is the fit. Unless you never know, they could always trade for Jimmy Butler. So then it could be the Bulls on the clock.
Oh, if only it were true. If only it were true. It should be known that I'm in the trade Jimmy Butler rebuild, burn it all to the ground, the Bulls fandom, because I'm just frustrated at their. You know, if you're a Bulls fan, is there any worse fan if you're not a Bulls fan on the outside and you look at other Bulls fans? It must annoy people to no end to listen to Bulls fans
talk about
the Bulls.
Yeah,
because it just is. I mean, between Rose and now we've gone off on a tangent.
But I will say, living in Chicago, it's fascinating to watch Bulls fans, you know, What, they had 42 wins last season? It's like the end of the world. Like, the Sixers won 10 freaking games. Give me a break, guys.
Yeah, it's differing expectations.
Yeah. All right. So we'll say Bender went to the Celtics at 3. That puts Phoenix on the clock at 4.
See, and this again, it's another interesting spot because with Bledsoe and Knight in the backcourt, you're not going to take Dunn.
Right.
Especially with the money they have invested there.
Yep.
With Devin Booker having a great season last year, and I don't know exactly what they still think of TJ Warren, who was having a pretty decent year before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Do you want to go wing again here? I don't know. I think with a guy like Tyson Chandler, who's, you know, aging,
mm-hmm.
and aging or already aged, I don't know how you define
very,
that.
Very much aged.
Yeah. And then Alex Len, who is going to be your center
right.
eventually. Who's a good complement to Alex Len, who's more of a back to the basket, you know, in the paint type center? I think, again, even though it's not the value I'd like there, Marquise Chris is a possibility.
Yep.
And Jaylen Brown is a possibility. I think if they still have hopes for TJ Warren, although TJ Warren isn't good enough to warrant ignoring someone like Jaylen Brown.
Right.
I think Jaylen Brown or Marquise Chris is there. I would lean toward going. See, again, this gets back into our need and best player available conversation we were having earlier.
Yeah.
I would lean almost toward Marquise Chris here instead of Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
Because you do have so many guys right now on the wing and the backcourt that need the ball in their hands to be effective.
Right.
Is Jaylen Brown going to come in and be a 3-and-D guy right away and just be a complimentary role type player? I don't know. Physically, he can play, but I don't know if he's going to be able to develop that way. I think a guy like Marquise Chris with a similar, not the height of Tyson Chandler, but a similar style of game could come in and learn from him. So Marquise Chris, I think I would go with there.
Yeah, I mean, they have Mirza Teletovic and John Lewis are both unrestricted free agents, so they like currently do not have a starting power forward. So I think you're right in that they're going to be looking to fill that hole, ideally at 4, possibly at 13 as well. But I think they're praying like hell that Dragon Bender falls to them. But if they don't,
oh, absolutely,
yeah. But if the Celtics screw them over there, I could see Marquise Chris. That makes sense to me.
See, and this is where I think the Celtics, again, we go back to them being the fulcrum of the draft.
Yeah,
you know, they've had Hield, they publicized the Hield and Murray workouts,
right.
So they're clearly looking at them.
Yeah.
They've also had with the Butler rumors.
Yep.
I mean, there's a good chance that they're not making the pick there.
Right.
And it's going to be someone else.
Yeah, that's a good.
I wish they would just make the DeMarcus Cousins trades right now and get DeMarcus Cousins there, because I think that would be a perfect fit with what they have going on. But again, DeMarcus Cousins is a very polarizing figure.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, Vlade came out earlier in the offseason and said they weren't trading him because they hired Dave Yeager and they want to see how they work together, but you never know. I would think number 3 and some change could make them change their tune. So let's go to Minnesota at 5. Who do you have them taking with Ingram, Simmons, Bender, and Chris off the board?
Man, I would love Dunn there, and I know Thibodeau would love Dunn. But you've got Rubio, mm-hmm. and it's do you take Dunn knowing that you have Rubio in the fold? They don't have enough shooting,
right?
They don't have enough shooting from the outside. So, given those factors, I think Jamal Murray would be the solid pick there for Minnesota, a guy that physically is able to play both the one and the two, and still has some development and has a very similar development curve to their stars. I mean, you're talking about. Wiggins was a freshman when he came out.
Yep.
Towns is a freshman when he came out. Got another guy with Jamal Murray. So I think Jamal Murray would be the solid pick there.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Let's go to New Orleans at 6.
Buddy.
Buddy, yeah.
Buddy Hield.
Yep.
Buddy, again, Chris Dunn, another good fit, but
yep.
Drew Holiday's still making $11 million a year.
Right.
Cash them checks, Drew. but I think Buddy would play well with Eric Gordon. You know, when he's not hurt, he's now he's gone.
Yeah.
Tyreek not filling that shooting aspect that they need. Ryan Anderson being a free agent.
Yep.
Bringing someone in that can shoot the ball like Buddy would be a good option.
Yeah, and as you said, Gordon's a unrestricted free agent as well. You got to figure he is probably on his way out, so would make sense to get Buddy there. And it does seem like Dunn is the one guy who, like, everyone agrees is a top five talent, but just based on the way the board shakes out, if someone doesn't trade up for him to get him at three, or if Boston doesn't take him, like, he just based on positional need, he's the one who seems like he's at risk of dropping.
It's interesting because, like, there's so many good point guards in the league right now.
Yeah.
And you've seen all these lineups that you put out there that are not necessarily the traditional basketball lineups, but it's really going to take a team that's confident to say, you know, we're going to draft Chris Dunn and we're going to put him next to the point guard we currently have, because Chris Dunn can guard the two.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that the interesting piece of this comes in, is that someone, you know, with the Warriors playing lineups with Sean Livingston playing with another point guard, with the Phoenix Suns, with what they do with Bledsoe and Knight, you know, they were successful when they did with Goran Dragic and Bledsoe when they had for Hornacek's first year.
Yeah,
but it's going to take a team that's confident. I think there is. I don't think there's any way Dunn falls out of the top six. I don't. Whether it's a team getting or trading up to get him, or one of these teams, like I said, being confident enough to take another point guard when they already have one, I don't think there's any chance Dunn falls out of the top six again, but I could be completely wrong, which I often am.
I think you're right. I think especially if he falls to six, I think Sacramento would try like hell to get up, leap New Orleans.
Absolutely.
Just in case they say, I think Drew only has one more year on his deal, so maybe they say, you know, we're going to take Dunn and groom him to be our point guard of the future, and Sacramento just has such a big need of point guard, they can't afford to risk him not falling there. So
yeah, absolutely.
That said, it looks like he might fall there because we've got the Nuggets at 7 on the clock, and they have Moutier. So who do you pick for the Nuggets?
Jaylen Brown.
Yep.
Jaylen Brown, I think, is a perfect fit here.
Yep.
With Moutier on board, Gary Harris come out at the end of last year at two guard. You've got Jokic and Nurkic.
Yeah.
And then you hear trade talks surrounding Gallinari and Fareed all the time and what they're going to do next. But I really like Jaylen Brown here, and again, with almost the same age as Moutier, and having that same trajectory with their two with those two developing together. Excuse me. But I really like Jaylen Brown there for Denver.
Yeah, Denver's in that weird spot where they're like partially rebuilding, but also have a bunch of like mid-career guys, like the Gallo. They have Fareed. They have Wilson Chandler, who I think is like 28 or 29. But then, like, yeah, as you said, they have Moutier, Gary Harris, Jokic, Nurkic. Like, it's a good combination where they don't necessarily need a guy to come in, play 35 minutes right from the start. Like, if Jaylen Brown, you said it earlier, he's like, he still has a lot of work to do to develop his basketball skill set, but Denver actually might be a good place for him to do that.
Yeah, I just think it's odd that they have it, that Gallinari and Fareed are still there.
Yeah.
And Wilson Chandler was supposed to be a Bull like in 2013 based on trade rumors.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But I think they need to, you know, scrap and just build around Moutier and if they draft Jaylen Brown here, I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah. So, In this mock, Sacramento at 8, Chris Dunn is still on the board. Do you even?
Yeah.
Do you run up to the podium to?
See. Absolutely, I run up to the podium and take Chris Dunn at 8 if he's still there, which he's not going to be.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if you're Sacramento, Chris Dunn is a perfect fit. You know, Rondo's not going to. I don't think there's any way Rondo comes back.
No, God no.
God no. And you know, I just think he does everything that you want there. But again, so let's say, for instance, Chris Dunn isn't there. I think this could be a spot where you take one of those athletic big men next to, like, another spot for Marquise Chris playing next to DeMarcus Cousins. I think that's an option here as well. You know, it's Vivek. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, this could be where he takes a shot on, like, Kay Felder.
Yeah.
He really likes the idea of a 5'9" point guard because he thinks that they can go between guys' legs. Like, that's Vivek for you. He's gonna crowdsource again for his first round.
Oh my god! Please do, or just send it to Philly again, Vivek. It's fun.
Oh, absolutely. But maybe Chris wouldn't be a fit here because they did draft Cauley Stein last year, which I neglected to even remember. So they've got Cauley Stein and Cousins up front, but you know, a point guard would be ideal. Let's say Dunn's gone. you go with a guy like Demetrius Jackson or Wade Baldwin, and that's it may be a little high for you, but this is the point where there isn't there isn't like 13 guys for 13 spots or 13 guys for 20. Like, there's not a defined lottery pick in this draft. There's five guys that five college guys,
yeah,
plus Bender that most assuredly will go in the lottery.
Right.
The rest of it is who knows.
Yeah, it seems like Simmons, Ingram are tier one. Bender, Heald, Murray, and Dunn are tier two. And then tier three is like 20 dudes. Like, it was just no differentiation between, like,
none.
Yeah. So I'm with that's you. That's what
makes it interesting.
Yeah. All right. So let's rapid fire through the rest of this lottery here. So, number nine, yeah, Toronto. Who do you got there?
I think Toronto, you go with, they take a risk with one, whether it's Scal or Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah.
But Jakob Poeltl's redundant. It's what they want to do with Valanciunas next,
right,
I guess, is whatever they think there. But if you want a guy to come in and play minutes for a playoff team, maybe Denzel Valentine goes here.
Ooh.
So let's go Denzel Valentine.
I like it.
On the wing here.
Okay, cool. 10 is Milwaukee.
Well, they should draft someone with like 7 foot arms because it would fit in with the rest of their team.
Right.
I mean, with Giannis running the point now and, you know, Monroe in the post, they don't have many holes to fill, but I think this is a spot where they take a shot on a guy like Scal.
Yeah.
Or a guy like Chris, if he's still there. Deonta Davis, maybe. One of the lengthy big guy, lengthy athletic big guys. So I'm gonna go with Deonta Davis right here.
I like it. Okay. So we've got Orlando now on the clock at 11.
I think Scal.
Yeah. Yep.
Scal.
Yeah, and
this is where my boy Sabonis drops, by the way.
Oh yeah, he is dropping.
And this is where the athleticism comes into play. You got Sabonis and Poeltl, who I have top eight, both of them in my top eight. But really, it's finding that team that has to have the right fit. Where, you know, Milwaukee's already got a slow big guy like Greg Monroe up front. They're not going to need another one. Orlando's got Vucevic. They're not going to need another one. So I think it's that this is where fit comes in, and the hardest fit in the NBA right now is finding a team that could sustain having a so slow-footed, less athletic big guy that has basketball ability and has it has some value, but is really the hardest fit to find.
Yeah, tell me about it.
You want to unclog that lane in Philly?
Yeah. All right, we'll go 12 is Utah.
Utah, I mean, I have a feeling they said last year they're going to make the playoffs. So I think they're going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
And just so finding a guy that can come in right away and get minutes, is Exum going to be healthy?
Right.
That's the biggest question. That's the biggest question on my mind right now. And even if he's healthy, is he going to be good enough for them to play meaningful minutes when they're, you know, going against the buzzsaw Western Conference? I like Wade Baldwin here.
Ooh, okay.
I like Wade Baldwin. So you've got a guy that can play point. If Exum comes back, you have a guy that can play off the ball. Alec Burks has a little bit of that too, but again, he's had some injury problems.
Yep.
Rodney Hood, they have some great positional versatility in Utah then.
Yeah, that would be – I like that a lot. So 13, Phoenix is back on the clock. We need a compliment to Marquise Chris.
Well, compliment to Marquise Chris. You can't take Alex Len here. Or you can't, I'm sorry, you can't take another Alex Len here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you go with it. You got to find a way. I think another Malik Beasley or
Ooh.
Torian Prince.
Okay.
It's a little high. It's a little high for Torian Prince. I like Torian Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Even the other guy that I think might be a little bit of a risk here, but again, only a freshman coming out of college, has a lot of developing to do, is Malachi Richardson. You've got a team, maybe Phoenix with two first round picks can take a little bit more of a risk with their second one. Granted, they're taking Marquise Chris and Malachi Richardson, which is like the ultimate tandem roll of the dice.
Right.
But so I think even though it's a little high for Malachi Richardson, maybe this is the spot where he goes, or Malik Beasley.
Okay.
We have the Bulls.
Yeah, your Bulls. And
then we have the Bulls.
Strategically, well, I noticed Sabonis and Poeltl have both slipped.
How did that happen?
What a coincidence.
It's just the way the board fell.
Yeah.
Let me just tell everyone out there. if you're telling me right now that it's Poeltl and Demetrius Jackson still out there, and I mean, it's it's going to depend on who they bring back next year. And I don't think Noah's back. I don't think Gasol's back.
Right.
Given all that, you've got Taj Gibson under contract. Is he trade bait? Got Bobby Portis. I think if you're really counting on Bobby Portis and Mirotić as part of your core going forward, the one guy that does things that neither of them really does is Sabonis. And I think Sabonis would fit that hole. How did that happen? That just happened so nicely.
Not
planned at all.
What a weird
considering
fluke.
I was rambling for some picks right. and trying to find a fit. You know that I didn't plan that out. So
that's true.
I would, if those all things being equal, but you know they want to find another point guard.
Yeah.
With Rose. Rose is not, I don't see any way he's re-signed after this year.
Right.
So, and Paxson loves his Notre Dame guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I could see Jackson definitely going there. So, I want to get into your top 50, but before we do that, give me a couple quick late first round or second round guys who you think could be steals.
Sure. I'm a big Malcolm Brogdon fan. Again, kind of similar to what we talked about with Demetrius Jackson, playing one role for a successful team one year, the next year coming back being the guy and having another successful run. It reminds me a little bit of like Rip Hamilton coming off screens. Mm. Obviously, we always compare guys to really good NBA players, so I hate because it's so hard to find a comparison. But I'm not saying he's going to be Rip Hamilton, but you know, very similar in that respect. So I like Malcolm Brogdon. I like DeAndre Bembry for the just athletic, can jump out of the gym, can rebound, does a little bit of everything. I like Ben Bentle, a power forward that can step outside in kind of the modern NBA. One really good year at Providence, but I really like what Ben Bentle can bring. Go a little bit down there. A lot of people are not, but I like Wayne Selden. And maybe this is kind of like your poison pill player that you fall in love with and you can't get yourself away from him, kind of like Bradley Beal is for me.
Yeah,
like I'm a huge Bradley Beal guy, but Wayne Selden never really had the best numbers at Kansas, really turned it on at the end of last season, but a physical, athletic two guard that can shoot it, has the range, but just for some maybe it's like one of those Nikola Mirotić type things where they say he's such a good shooter, but he doesn't. Why does he not make more?
Mm-hmm.
But I like Wayne Selden. And then another guy I like here is from little-known Weber State, Joe Ballenboy, another power forward in the realm of Ben Bentle, where you're a little athletic and step outside and do a little bit of everything. And then Caris LeVert, as much as I growing up, went to Illinois and Notre Dame fan, that's two ways of hating Michigan.
Yeah.
But Caris LeVert, I mean, he was 2 years ago was talked about as being a lottery pick before these injuries came into play.
Right.
Arguably the best pro prospect on a team with, you know, Trey Burke, Glenn Robinson, Tim Hardaway. He was the sixth or seventh man on that team. But, I mean, really brings a lot to the table in positional versatility. Long arms. He's got the length, got the athleticism, can shoot it. But it's just a matter of him staying healthy. He's 32 on my college prospects.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd be much higher if there was that confidence. I mean, he's had two season-ending injuries to this point.
Yeah.
I mean, what NBA team is going to take a risk on that? But again, like Brogdon, Brogdon and LeVert are two guys that I think we're going to say after this draft or after their rookie season, some playoff team is going to take them. And they're going to be very happy with them, and they're going to play a role immediately.
Yeah.
And we're going to say, wow, we knew that would have happened. And it's probably going to be the Spurs.
Yeah. So definitely the Spurs and the Warriors, you know what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the guys I like at the bottom of the first round or early second round.
Yeah, I'm a big LeVert guy as well. And I don't think the Sixers will take him because they're probably injury averse after the whole Joel Embiid situation. But
yeah,
I like him a lot, and I like Patrick McCaw as well. So
you're a Patrick McCaw guy.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just because I think, you know, I think if they're going to take Simmons at number one, they're going to need some shooting around him. McCaw,
oh, yeah.
McCaw's a good shooter. He's got the length.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, all right. So that was our look through the first round. We're going to quickly turn to you shared a chart with us, your top 50 NCAA prospects since 2002. So before we get in here, again, only college guys, not international, not high school guys. LeBron James is not on the list.
Why is LeBron not on there?
Yeah, not. he's not on there. Dwight Howard's not on there. Just college guys. So
yeah,
don't come at Jeff on Twitter.
And this attacking. This was not Chad Ford. This is not Chad Ford-esque. I did not go back and revise this. As I can attest by Derek Williams being my number 28 prospect overall in since 2002.
Right.
So
yeah.
I was surprised when I went through this. It was I had my little grading system, and I was surprised that I had five guys from this draft in my top 50.
Yeah.
Very surprised. None of them in the top 20.
Right.
But yeah, I have Simmons 22, Ingram 21. And then I have Heald 35. Let me go in order here. Dunn 32, Murray 33, Heald 35.
Yeah.
Just based on at the time, you know, trying to block out the other stuff in there. Again, I have Michael Beasley 27, so take this with a grain of salt. But just how they fit into the whole scheme of things, I like the top five guys a lot.
Yeah.
Sabonis, I'd have to go back and look at my master list, but I know he was in the top. There's a little bit of a drop off in my top after him. Like I think he's 75 to 80.
Okay.
But so I was surprised at how well these guys graded out compared to my past prospects. But again, I have Ingram right behind DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
I like DeMarcus Cousins a ton coming out of Kentucky, even with all the attitude questions and all that. So, I was really surprised at how this draft graded out. I mean, I think it's only since 2002. I think there's four drafts that have five guys in my top 50, three or four drafts, and this is one of them. So I was surprised, especially with all the talk about how weak it is.
Yeah, that's what kind of caught my eye too. Just to give more perspective, you have right ahead of Ingram and Simmons, you have guys like Chris Paul, Jabari Parker, Joel Embiid, Brandon Roy, Al Horford, and Boogie. You have them ahead of Emeka Okafor, Andrew Bogut, Luol Deng, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Love, Chris Bosh, and then the guards especially. So 31 through, let's say, 38, just to give some context. 31 is James Harden. 32 is Chris Dunn. 33 is Jamal Murray. 34 is Russell Westbrook. 35 is Buddy Hield. 36, Bradley Beal. 37, Eric Gordon. 38, Mike Conley. So that's just to give some perspective as to kind of the range. Like, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are like top five, top 10 NBA players. Yeah. And you've got Dunn, Murray, and Hield right in there. So
I think people tend to forget the questions that were surrounding those guys when they came out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was whether or not Russell Westbrook could play the point. People thought the Thunder were crazy for working him out of the point guard because he never really played at UCLA. I mean, Harden had, it was whether or not he was going to defend. That's still a question, but you didn't know he was going to score it as well as he does.
Yeah.
And, like I said before, I remain a huge Bradley Beal and Eric Gordon fan for some unknown reason. I like the 6'3", 6'4", well-built shooting guard that can just knock it down. But I love when they get hurt apparently. So I was surprised how they graded out. Chris Dunn at point guard, I have him right ahead of Westbrook. And it tells you how much I like Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
And the next point guard I have on the list is 15 with Chris Paul.
Right.
And Dunn is 32. So there's a big drop off there. But as far as point guards go, I have Dunn right ahead of Westbrook and Mike Conley coming out. So I like Dunn a lot. And again, it would be hard for me to take him over Simmons and Ingram, but I think, Brian, your dream scenario.
Yeah.
If it happened, Ben Simmons and Chris Dunn. I mean, that's pretty, I mean, you need a little shooting somewhere. You just fill in with shooters.
Right.
Just have those two and just have those two, Noel, and then a bunch of shooters.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
It's all fixed. I just fixed your problem.
I know. Believe me. I know. Yeah. We just started a mock draft at Hardwood Paroxysm, and I'm obviously the Sixers. So I immediately put Okafor on the trade block, but got shot down pretty quickly for the number three pick. So I hope real Brian Colangelo has better luck than fake Brian Colangelo. But I did, you know, I just wanted to bring up your top 50 since 2002, just to give listeners a perspective that this draft, you said it, it has the perception of being weak. And we've talked about how a lot of the guys outside the top six, top seven have, you know, significant question marks. But it seems like the top end talent really is comparable to some of the stronger drafts. And I wonder, you know, like 2014 was supposed to be a once in a generation draft, but then like, turns out 2015 looks better. Like 2015, I mean, Kaminsky was probably, him and Cameron Payne were like the worst lottery picks. And that's still, like, they'll be rotation players. But I mean, there are you know, Porzingis looks like a superstar at 4. Devin Booker showed, I mean, he showed a lot of flashes at 13. Miles Turner at 11. Yeah. Justin Swinslow at 10. So, like, there was a lot of talent there, which is just to say that, you know, every year we go through it, like, waxes and wanes. It's like every February it's the best draft class ever, and then every April it's the worst draft class ever. And now, a week before the draft, I mean, a lot of these guys have holes in their game. But I wouldn't, if I'm a fan of like Phoenix or Minnesota or New Orleans with the 4, 5, 6 pick, like you're about to get a very good player. Like, don't be discouraged that you're not getting Simmons or Ingram. There is a lot of talent, top end talent in this draft in that mid lottery range.
Absolutely. I'm just, you know, I'm glad you didn't touch on Jahlil Okafor being ranked ahead of Blake Griffin.
Yeah, that's I'm going to give you a chance to defend that
this
one.
This is how you know I didn't go back and change anything.
I know, right? Well, no, because, so in your defense, you wrote a thing last year at B-Ball Breakdown about Okafor, and I think you said he was the most gifted offensive big man since Tim Duncan, which, you know, having watched his rookie season, like, I agree. Like, he was a lot more well-rounded as a rookie than I expected. I thought he came in with the perception of being like this plodding low post guy who, you know, he can hit hook shots, but that's about all he can do. But he's got like, he has some phenomenal footwork. Like he can really, he can dribble it from the top of the key and go right to the basket, which is rare for a 6'10", 270 pound guy. Like that's not something those guys can do. And he's got some, I wrote a thing recently at B-Ball Breakdown about Nerlens and Okafor and which one to trade, and I compiled a video of him against Orlando. I think it was in like late February, right before he got hurt, and it's just like five or six shots of him putting Nikola Vucevic in the spin cycle. Like he just completely obliterated him. So
I think he was so good right away at Duke, and like everything came so easy offensively for him, and you know, he comes out ACC Player of the Year, they win the national championship, that immediately he's under scrutiny to perform. And people don't think about Tim Duncan with his, you know, with his footwork, but I mean, I love watching big guys, and they're like, I was mentioning about Sabonis earlier, guys that have the good fundamental post skills that are few and far between nowadays. You don't see many guys with that because they're not coaching them up that way anymore,
right?
It's perimeter oriented basketball, which is fine. I'm not being one of those old timers saying, oh, I want to go back to the good old days where we threw it to the guy in the post and he just backs him in. No, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Because I loved watching the Warriors Cavs game the other night. But that's not how it was 15 years ago. But there is still a place for these guys. It just is finding the right fit for a guy, and next to Nerlens Noel is not it.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the thing. I've been saying that for much of the season. I think the dude's going to have a great NBA career. I just don't think it's going to happen in Philly. I think it's just there. He conflicts with basically every other big man on the roster, and you know, not even Nerlens, but Embiid's coming. There is quote unquote a 99% chance that Dario Saric is coming. I don't know. He's a great fit with them. Ben Simmons, like, you know, you want the ball in Ben Simmons' hands as much as possible. So if you take Simmons, like, you almost have to trade Okafor. So again, I think he'll have a good NBA career. I think he's kind of like Kevin Love in that regard. Like Kevin Love, I don't think the ship has sailed on Kevin Love. I just think the ship has sailed in Cleveland on Kevin Love.
Well, it's just like it's fine. It's when you're playing with five other guys on the court, it's tough to find something that fits together.
Yeah,
it just is. And the Warriors are blessed enough to have found that.
Right.
And I mean, that's just you watch them play and you instantly see this makes sense.
Yeah.
And this makes basketball sense.
And game five was kind of it showed how fragile that is. Like Draymond Green was out and, you know, their whole system kind of went to hell. Like we even lit them up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you said it very well. It's, you need all five parts to work together because you have one weak link and it all just goes to hell really fast.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, I just need my Bulls to find it now. That's it. This list did bring back some memories, though. I mean, I was looking back at it and trying to, because I always go back through it and I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, what was I thinking at this time? What was going through my head? Because now you have this concept of what they are now as an NBA player.
Yeah.
And like, I just, when I see Jay Williams at number 4,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, what could have been?
Right.
Oh, what could have been?
Right.
Because he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. He was my number 4, my number 1 point guard, but, it just gives you – you have to remember what was thought of these guys before they actually entered the NBA and entered through the rigors of what goes on. And you know, how they're affected by it. I did have Tyrus Thomas 45 too. I had one spot ahead of Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So again,
we won't talk about that this. One. But yeah, you had you had Derrick Rose number 9 ahead of Wall, Irving, D Wade, Darren Williams, Chris Paul as well. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, what could have been?
What are you gonna do?
What could have been indeed? Well, Jeff, thanks for hopping on with us today. This was really good stuff. You can find Jeff's work again at bballbreakdown.com, Nylon Calculus. You can find him on Twitter at JFEY5. Jeff, do you have any draft content to promote coming out? I think you and Adam and Josh are working on something.
So Adam Spinella and Josh Riddell over B-Ball Breakdown are putting together our composite rankings for the site. And then we're also going to be doing a little convo that we're going to post, just kind of some banter back and forth, mainly on guys that we disagree on. I think I mentioned earlier, Josh has got Wade Baldwin very high. Other guys that we're down on. So we're taking a look at that right now. I'm going to try and put some of that stuff out before the draft goes. So look for that on B-Ball Breakdown.
Yeah. And then check us out as well at the NBA Pod on Twitter. You can find us, as always, on SoundCloud and on iTunes. Please leave us reviews. We'd love to get them. Until then, Jeff, thanks again for hopping on, and good luck with your draft coverage in the next week, man.
Thanks for having me. We'll talk again.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.